Well, before it starts getting really cold in here, I guess we should start.
This is the perfect time to start, right after it turns off.
Well, yeah, because it turned off, and then it's not going to start up again until it's 14 degrees, which will be fucking pretty cold.
Uh-huh. That's why I dressed for it.
You cock.
Cock.
Cock. How's my dink? You good? Do I sound as good?
You want to hear your dink? Here's your dink.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Sounds from the 70s with Gary and Rob, sometimes known as Shuggy Two Shits.
Please continue.
I heard you. And we are coming to you from outside the city limits, but inside the limits of the Twilight Zone. I got no other way to describe where we are. It's not our territory. And it feels like it's not our territory.
It doesn't feel real.
No, it doesn't. I feel like Rod Serling is here any moment to say, two men making a podcast.
But this was a podcast in the twilight. Aren't they all, really?
Yeah. Now, in today's episode, we have the final album in our series on debut records, or debut records, released 50 years ago in 1973. And this is our last pilgrimage into our 50th anniversary. In January, we'll be starting 1974. Not the year. It will be 2024. I don't want to screw you up and have you wearing bell bottoms.
Don't go back in time. I've tried it. It's embarrassing.
And we cover 12 albums in a year. We do 3 months worth of a celebration every year of 50 years ago. Yeah. 3 whole months of our life is dedicated to what happened 50 years ago.
Okay, but in 7 years, and we've gone through all the years, the sky's the limit.
Anyway. Now, I forgot. I didn't even say the album. The album we're doing is by Tom Waits and his debut, Closing Time. And I know you threw me off with that. It was funny, but you threw me off. Now, we're in here, and this is our very first day that we have the heating system in.
Yeah.
And it's new, has some kinks to be figured out, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's nice to have heat because it will get colder. It's cold now and it's going to get colder.
It's super cold. I'll tell stories of how cold it is later.
What, on your blog?
I think sometime later in the show.
Rob's blog. By the way, if you want to read Rob's blog, it's at robsblog.idiot.com.
There's a lot of stuff on the weather and my thoughts on the weather.
Actually, it's all about the weather. So now, if you're listening to our last show.
I was.
We had a pretty rough show.
Yeah.
At least a very rough first half hour, mostly because of Rob. I don't like to put blame, except where blame is due, and it was definitely due on Rob. And Rob was having trouble, hemorrhoids, or what was it?
I think it was a low chair.
Yeah, it was. It was
actually, as you can see, I don't have that low chair tonight.
I didn't see. I don't care. And and because it was also my fault, I was not as prepared as I usually am for some of the segments or some of the things we were doing in the first half hour. And it didn't help that Rob was having trouble with his chair.
I was being really distracting. I was like kind of jumping up and down, waving my arms, and Gary didn't know what was wrong.
I didn't actually know what was wrong.
He's having a seizure. What do I do with the body?
If you're wondering what the hell are we talking about, just listen to our last show for the first half hour. It's kind of the worst half hour we've done, I think, because it was, it's called, I think you call it Ragtag. Is that what you call it?
Ragtag.
Yeah.
Show 191 setting a new low.
Yeah, new, setting a new low. But we picked it up very quickly with our review, and it was a really good review. And yeah, it was not a good episode. Other than the review, but don't just not listen to the review, because it's interesting to see or to hear when we're kind of off.
Because it happens so infrequently.
It happens only every like second week.
We're pretty good.
But today's episode is so good. So good, I already have tagged it to go in our time capsule of really good episodes.
Well, we better not let us down.
Well, you know how many we have in our time capsule of really good episodes, Rob? 3 so far. So I'm pretty happy.
All right.
out of almost 200 shows, we have tagged 3. To go in our capsule. Of
We're reading. Mighty selective.
Speaking of time, and I know time is a big thing to Rob. Rob has written papers.
On time.
On time and how.
Why is I'm always late?
It's not philosophical. It's just why. Yeah. How come my buzzer goes off early in the morning? Yeah.
It's a strange time phenomenon. I always leave 5 minutes after the time I intend. Always. Forever.
Anyway. Speaking of time capsules, Rob, how was your week?
Well, the week was a little somber there. It was so cold I couldn't do much work. And then come Friday, the boss of the company decides that we're going to shut down work for the year because it's too cold, so we had to lay off all the Ukrainian guys. So I don't got anyone working for me anymore.
Now, let me just point this out, because I usually don't listen to what you're saying.
Usually.
But you said Ukrainian. It's not because you dislike Ukrainians. It's because they're the only people that work with you.
No, right? It's not like I'm a big Russian supporter here.
It's just that your crew is all Ukrainian.
Yeah, and they have been laid off today. So they're looking at about 4 months of unemployment, which hopefully that'll be good. And I'll see them again next year, but it's a sad and somber day.
Well, it was a bummer. No, really, it was a big bummer.
That's okay. I'm getting laid off in 2 weeks.
Oh, that's fun.
That is hilarious.
Just spend more time at home. Okay, so odds and ends, lost time is not found again. And this week, unfortunately, is a couple of death announcements, which we don't like to do. But when it happens, it happens. We have to go through it. And we note that in the last couple of weeks, I don't know when this airs, and I wrote this 2 weeks ago, so I don't know.
Yeah, it's been a cold winter.
What does that have to do? Are these people dying because of the cold winter?
No, we haven't been able to report this stuff because...
We couldn't move into the studio until we had a heating system because it was too cold. Sorry, you kind of put it in the middle of the sentence instead of explaining at the beginning.
That's when it's best.
Yep. Carla Bley, noted jazz composer and pianist, passed away this week at the age of 87. Now, Carla Bley is well known on this show. Carla Bley, I should say, is well known on this show for her album Escalator Over the Hill, which we reviewed in one of our very, very first episodes. And it is, in my opinion, Rob may agree, is the strangest album we have reviewed on this show. It's fucking strange. And you know what? I've listened to many records and many weird records, and it may be the strangest album that I've ever heard.
This one was consistently strange all the way through.
Yeah. It was a jazz opera.
Others have strange parts.
I can't describe it. You got to listen to the episode that we reviewed because I can't explain it in a few lines, but I will say that Jack Bruce is on it, Linda Ronstadt, and yet it has very little to do with rock and roll or pop music. I don't know.
There's a few little parts which kind of groove into rock, but then
actually there is a couple of rock and roll parts in it. It's really weird, and it is I pointed out on the show, and see, I got a good memory. I pointed out on the show 5 years ago that it was listed as one of the 50 most pivotal moments in jazz music history. We didn't rate it that high, but we kind of liked it. We did, but it was really fucking strange.
It was a weird experiment. It was,
yeah. It tested our patience, but we kind of liked the adventurousness of it. Yeah.
Yeah, it was a thing that needed to be done.
And I have heard so many things since Carla Bley has died about how much of a genius she was. And I guess in her world, she was. We don't really go in that avant-garde jazz world, so we don't really know, but... she was very well respected, and that was one of our most memorable weeks of listening to music, so we definitely had to mention that. 87, she died of brain cancer. That's a very full life, 87, and releasing many, many albums as you do in the jazz world, so I wanted to pass that along. Also, this week or last week, I don't know, because I have no idea the time system between when we do the show, when it's aired.
Did you say something?
But one of your favorite acts, Dwight Twilley.
Dwight Twilley?
The power pop guitarist and leader of the Dwight Twilley Band passed away. Now, Dwight Twilley was known as Phil Seymour, was the lead singer. You know Phil Seymour, and he... He was a drummer, and they had a hit single with I'm on Fire, and kind of started the power pop movement in what it was called. There was power pop before. Now, I'm not going to say what power pop is, because I already did this when we did power pop
in
the late
70s. People.
And even Rob didn't understand when I was trying to describe what power pop was. It's and I'm not going to do it here. We hopefully will feature the Dwight Twilley Band when we do early 70s power pop, which I have been planning for 3 years. We still got themes and music that we haven't touched upon yet.
We got themes coming out the parts of the Exude themes.
But Dwight Twilley is known as kind of a prodigy that never succeeded. Kind of like didn't because of many fuck-ups by the record company, Dwight Twilley never achieved the kind of fame or notoriety that he kind of deserved. But he is, in the last week or so, been mourned for being that, for being a very talented person who just never got the breaks. And you're a big Dwight Twilley fan. Is there anything you want to say?
So we're going to miss him?
Sorry, he doesn't even know what I'm talking about.
I want to say say hello to all the folks back home.
Okay, no disrespect to Dwight Twilley. I love the Dwight Twilley Band, but Rob doesn't know what the hell I'm talking about. Our big announcement on Odds and Ends, you know what the big announcement
The big
Rob.
Announcement involves sending stuff to people.
No, we're not giving anything away.
How good could it be?
The big announcement is our Christmas episode.
Oh, Christmas episode.
Is 3 weeks away. We have no guests this year because everybody on our guest list, as usual, is dead.
Yeah. Too bad about Foster Brooks. I liked him.
Yeah, he was a good guy.
Yeah.
You know, he pretended he was drunk all the time.
Pretended?
Sorry about that, kids. It's like saying there's no Santa Claus. Well, there is, but there's like saying there's no Santa Claus.
He wasn't really drunk.
So it'll just be me and Rob. It's still going to be a rip-roaring time. What was I going to say, Rob?
You were going to say about
3 weeks. We're going like 7 weeks straight here, which we don't usually do. And... we got two more episodes after this. I'm actually going to tell you what we're going to do. I don't usually do this, but I'm in a good mood because it's near Christmas, even though we're taping this show in April. No, I'm just kidding.
It's April Christmas.
We're going to be doing a couple of memorial episodes again for Gary Wright, who just passed away, and Jimmy Buffett. And then we're not taking any breaks because of the schedule. It's kind of all screwed up. So and then we're going right into our Christmas episode, which we're excited. And then we take a 8-week break. Nah, eight weeks. Nah, I'm just joking. I'm pulling your schlavong.
Lie awake in bed dreaming of 8 weeks.
We take about 3 weeks off and then we'll be back. But that's on our schedule. When we do our show, we take 1 week off and then we have to do shows in January for January. So we can take those 3 weeks off. You see how complicated our lives are? And the funny thing is that it never works out the way we plan. Never. Even next week, we'll probably not work out the way we planned it.
Who can say what's going to happen?
Who?
Me.
Yeah, people have turned off already. Okay. Now, today we have, and last week was an absolute disaster, but today we have part two of our look at the radio series, The History of Rock and Roll, aired in 1969, and then an expanded form in 1978. Now, when I did this last week, one, I was ill-prepared, and two, Rob was moving around like some sort of monkey.
Like a stretching. I'm being possessed by a demon.
So it was not pretty, and I was even thinking of not continuing it because, in all honesty, it kind of spoke for itself. But I'm going to finish it. I'm a man.
This show must go on.
And the show must go on. We are going to continue like men or women would do in a situation like this.
It's a live performance. You can't just shut down.
No, it's not live. I mean, we could shut it down right now and I could say we're not doing it.
I could shut it down right now and say we're not doing it.
No, then you're fired.
I guess that's a lousy producer when he chooses not to produce.
Oh, yes, that's right. As of this show and this week, Rob is our new producer.
Yeah, I just found out.
And he...
There's very few things in life that people congratulate you for that you say, oh, dang.
Rob was actually doing... I just realized he was doing a lot of the stuff that a producer does, almost all the stuff that a producer does. So why not make him the producer and give him that big price hike and salary hike that he so deserves?
So does this mean there's no producer coming? He's here.
I'm talking to him. The History of Rock and Roll, like I said, aired in 1978, was an hour long. And it covered, you know what the last show was? Fucking Eagles. That was the last show.
On the History of Rock and Roll?
On the History of Rock and Roll. What a bummer way to go out on after 50 weeks of the History of Rock and Roll to end on the Eagles. Now, I know there's a few Eagle fans out there, but even you got to realize the Eagles kind of suck.
No, and that was their last show. Does that put you in a foul mood?
Put me in a foul mood. I didn't realize that. It's been a long time. I haven't heard it in 30, 40, 50, almost 50 years. So I didn't know that. Wow. It's interesting, Fleetwood Mac, they had a show on Fleetwood Mac, but they didn't play anything Peter Green era or anything like that. Yeah, they played everything Buckingham and Nicks era, which I found. Maybe there is an earlier show. Maybe I'm not looking, because it's huge, this list of episodes and songs played, which I have in front of me. But it takes a long time to scroll down. This Elton John show, holy shit. Seriously, I'm going to count how many songs. Now, this is why the History of Rock and Roll is the greatest educational tool that I think should be taught in schools. I really do. Because it has, like I said last week in a very bad way, it plays every hit song of a major artist that there is. So it tries not to leave anything out. And I'm going to tell you how many songs. I'm not going to tell you the name of the song because that'd go on forever. But I'm going to tell you, I'm going to count. Rob's going to entertain you for a second. I'm going to count how many Elton John songs in their show they played to emphasize Elton John. So if you could do some your shtick for just a minute here, Rob.
little important trivia fact a lot of people don't know about Elton John. His real first name is not, in fact, Elton. It's Reggie.
20 songs that they played from Elton John just to let you know what Elton John was like. Plus, they're all hit singles from the 70s.
And this was clearly not near the end. I mean, it was, he still had a lot of hit songs left to go.
Yes, this ends. These 20 songs start in 1970 with your song, and they end in 1976 with Don't Go Breaking My Heart, and Sorry Seems to Be the Hardest Word. Wow. So there's still 4 years left in the 70s, and you've already got 20 big hit singles on here. That's amazing. And not to leave one off, this is very thorough. This is what I'm saying. This is what I learned rock and roll by. And the fact that they didn't leave Eddie's songs out was, I got the big dictionary version is what I got.
The big dictionary
the version. Big like Stevie Wonder was the show before that. And 1, 2, 3, 4.
Five, oh, yeah. He'd have
eight,
a few.
9, 10, 11, 12. 13 songs of his in one show.
Minimum.
Ending with the songs in the Key of Life. So we still had a couple of years in the 70s. I mean, it showed me all the hits of the. There was 3 Rolling Stone shows.
Yeah, I believe that.
Yeah, so that's wild. They did a show on progressive rock, which is very impressive. I wouldn't call Alice Cooper progressive rock, but they put that in the show. Bachman Turner Overdrive, by the way, is not progressive rock. I got a little bit of a beef there. Is it okay if I say I got a beef?
I think we'll allow it.
It's pretty hard to have a beef with a show that is so thorough. But
yeah, clearly not perfect.
Not perfect. One of them, speaking of not perfect, the 70s, I mean, I don't know how I got through this one, but the 70s soft rock show. I mean, this show is so limp. You would call it extremely flaccid, I think is what you'd call it.
If they don't want to rock and roll, why even try? Why do this?
You got a lot of John Denver. You got some America in there. You got some Barry Manilow and Seals and Crofts.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Starland Vocal Band. It's not a rocking show, although Don Kirshner might have it on one of his Keitel albums.
We'll find out.
His rock guitar album where he had Seals and Crofts on it was really good. Anyways, there's not too much to talk about. Unfortunately, there's really no way to hear this. It's really in a time capsule now because... They won't play it. They won't play it for reasons that they don't have. They can't.
Copyright.
They can't for 2 reasons. One is Rob's right, the copyright. And the second is that they just don't do things like that anymore. You just, everything is all, this is what we do, and this is songs we're going to play. And they just don't take time out for, oh, we're going to do this history of rock and roll. Plus, they haven't updated it since 1978. So
no need.
But I was just going to say that you could have it the history of rock and roll from 1954 to 1978, and that's all you need is your basic classic rock, and then you can go on from there from 1979 to the present day. And that's a good point, Rob. Of course you can't with all the legalities involved now with copyright and everything. I really think that this should be in every high school being taught. And I'm very serious about that because kids have no way of learning. I don't know where I would be if I didn't have a show like this to teach me in the first year that I started. Luckily, the first year that I started listening seriously to music was when this show aired in 1978. And it brought... all of rock and roll to me up to that time in like 50 shows. That's it. I didn't have to scrounge for hits on the radio or anything. It was right there in this show. And like I said 4 or 5 times already, I think it should be compulsory in teaching people about one of the most important musical, one of the important musical forms of all time, which is rock and roll. And because I think rock and roll, not only as a musical form, is important, it changed the way we look, it changes the way we acted, along with other things. I'm not saying it was just rock and roll.
Yeah, that period was a big change.
It was a big change.
Small changes happening historically, but...
Exactly. Hey, we started wearing long hair because of a rock and roll group called the Beatles.
Long hair.
And...
well, the men did anyway.
Men did anyway. And a lot of these changes that were made were because of rock and roll groups, at least fashion-wise, attitude-wise, about rebelling, speaking up against the war. All of these things, because rock and roll and music in general meant so much to the generation we're talking about here, from the early to late 50s to the late 70s. If you didn't live through it, my God, music meant everything. It meant changing the world. It meant what you listened to could change the world. And it was all encapsulated in this show. You know, they have a great website for it, but there's no way to hear it. And you just can't play the songs because they also talk about the songs. Where it went on the charts, how it did. It's really sad that it's kind of gone into oblivion. But thank God I got to listen to it, because it all kind of winds down to me doing this show. One of the reasons I wanted to do this show was to teach people about... We couldn't teach people about the whole history of rock and roll, because that would be... We'd be here
for 50 years. Time management.
We had to cut it down to what we thought was the golden age of music, which was the 70s, when all these musical forms brought up. And even then, it's overwhelming for us. But it was still my... This show from 1978 is the reason we're doing this show. Is because there's just not enough... There's all the music that you want nowadays, but there's no context for it. And we're trying to put context into it. And we're trying to show the different types of music and whether you might like it. We grade the music, but we also say, if you don't like this type of music, then don't buy this record.
Yeah, yeah. There's some that appeal to different people. There's also some that appeal to different moods. It's your taste and also what you're going through at the time.
There's what you're going through at the time, right?
Yeah.
And there's so much. And I don't mean in quantity. I mean, there's so much genres is what I mean.
Yeah.
I don't just mean that there's 6,000 bands out there making albums. What we're saying is there's so many genres. You can't like them all. We kind of do in a way.
You had early on, a manageable amount of musical styles. And
right.
It just kind of exploded.
And then all of a sudden there's like...
You got too many.
There's no way that a punk rocker liked progressive rock. Even though I like punk rock and progressive rock. That's kind of what we're saying is that, hey, if you may not like this part of what we're doing, but wait another couple of weeks and we might do a show that you like. But we're not dissing any form of music by not having it on either, which is very important.
We should.
Although
let's
we should.
Pick a particular type
well,
of
we
music
are with polka.
And just be angry with it.
Polka music we are not covering on.
I'm trying to think of the great polka acts of the 70s.
And if Phil Collins was doing solo music in the 70s, we would not have any of his solo albums on here. I know that sounds terrible, but it's also true.
You're suggesting they lack merit.
I hate to say that, but damn rights. Okay, you know the problems I have with Phil Collins.
Yeah, I got a few myself.
Yeah.
At least one big one. Stole my bike.
The part about kicking his ass. And I might someday when I come upon him, like I have a few times, and he's given me the blow off, as they say. Is that what the kids say?
The blow off, yes. From, yes.
You're getting too much of me to be a yes man now.
When you're kicking his ass, just ask him what he did with my bike.
Okay, that was much better than last week. Last week was a disaster when we did the history of rock and roll. Today I'm much more focused, and it was a weird week last week. It really was.
It was almost like we needed a break.
You know what? It was almost like we needed a break. Oh, you said
almost
that.
Like that.
Yeah. The album. I just cracked myself up in a delayed way. The album we are reviewing today is the debut album from singer-songwriter Tom Waits, the legendary Tom Waits, called Closing Time, released in 1973, 50 years ago. This year, as we close out this year, our last album as an anniversary album. Tom Waits, very interesting character. Oof. I can't even remember the first time I heard Tom Waits, to be honest with you. I really can't.
First, he'd released that concert show, Big Time.
Yeah,
and that was getting good. Played quite a bit on.
That was good
on the music stations, and I taped it. And I've watched that about probably 5 to 10 times.
Oh, really?
Thoroughly it was a good show. It. Yes, his showmanship is fantastic. I really like the songs. And
you know what I'm going to say?
Then I started hearing about him doing acting stuff.
Oh, yeah, he was a good actor. I mean, he still is. I shouldn't say was, because he still acts now and then. You should see him in Ironweed, by the way, with Jack Nicholson.
He's Meryl Streep, yeah.
And Meryl Streep. He's fantastic in that. And it makes me... It's really hard sometimes to forget that musicians are playing... Like our acting, totally forgot. Every time I see Tom Waits act, he's in Rumblefish too and other things, I totally forget it's Tom Waits, the singer. I totally am immersed in his character. I do remember if this may be the first time I saw Tom Waits, and it was hilarious. He was on, if anybody remembers the old Fernwood Tonight Show or America Tonight, as it was renamed, it was only on for a year in 1978. And it had Martin Mull and Fred Willard.
I remember seeing reruns of it.
Oh, yeah. And it was, and I actually watched it when it wasn't reruns, when it was first done. And it was a hilarious show. It was the Larry Sanders show before Larry Sanders. It was a make-believe TV show. Yeah. And it was hilarious. And the genesis of the show, that they would have some real people on there and fake people on there. And the premise for this one was Tom Waits' bus broke down in Fernwood. So he had nothing else to do. So they had him on the show. And Tom Waits was really hilarious. And then they got him to sing a song. And he's singing, of course, in this really raspy voice on the piano. And Martin Mull and Fred Willard are looking at each other like, who is this guy? Why is he singing like that? Maybe we made a mistake. And that was my first exposure, I think, to Tom Waits. My biggest exposure and best one was the Big Time movie, which I loved. And I just, I really like, his music is very complex. Because it goes into two sections. His music goes into his first one, which is his kind of like alcoholic piano player in a lounge at 2 a.m. songwriter. And then in the mid 80s, early 80s, he changed and it became more of more eclectic. So he had two phases, which has about the same amount of albums.
That's the thing is, I remember him... from the concert movie I saw, his voice was a lot more gravelly and lower. And then on this album, when he's starting out, he doesn't have that same voice.
Yeah, we're going to get to that. We're going to get to that, which is a very good point. And people may know him only from his gravelly voice. And it's only gotten worse as he has done electronic or very experimental. I don't know what the word is. Tom Waits music is all I can describe it. That he has been doing for the last 30 years or so. His voice has just gotten worse and worse as far as being gravelly and everything. And he works mainly now in getting the music across. And and how he says it more than listening to actually what he says. It's really hard, but they say experimental genres on here. And yeah, I would say if you like it, you're going to love it, the experimental part of it, the kind of like weird Tom Waits stuff. And if you don't, especially if you're an early fan of Tom Waits, like he is the songwriter here in the 1970s.
You'll probably be confused.
You'll probably be like, I don't like this at all. But and then you have your Tom Waits fans who like anything he does. And he's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, as he should be. Anyways, he was born in 1949 in Whittier, California. Grew up, which I did not know. I always thought he was a Los Angeles cat because he was always Los Angeles all the time. But he was actually raised in San Diego. And he played in the San Diego folk music circuit. And he actually relocated to Los Angeles in 1972, where he worked as a songwriter before signing a recording contract with Asylum Records. And he had he impressed enough for him to move out to Los Angeles was Herb Cohen, who is Frank Zappa's manager, or was Frank Zappa's manager. I'm not going to get into, you know, he had whether it's real. I don't think it's real because he came from an actually middle class family. But you see Tom Waits, and I remember Tom Waits so vividly in the late 70s as being like this guy. It looked like this guy who came in off the street, cigarette in his mouth, went on, sat down on the piano, started playing. And it was like then he would go and live on the streets. Well, he didn't really live on the streets. He did drink. I wouldn't say he was an alcoholic. I really don't know. I really don't know that much about his personal side. I'm a big fan of his music, but I like the persona because I love these guys.
That character he presents.
I love that character because it's a character that draws me when I watch a movie like that and I see a guy playing at the piano and singing and then he has nowhere to go after that. And I kind of like that. I love that 3 a.m. music. Like I love listening to anybody at the piano singing lonely songs. With just him and his piano and maybe a stand-up bass and singing about this and that and mistakes made. And this was kind of him. He was kind of like this persona he took on was like this guy who was an old beatnik, right? Because he wore the suit. He wasn't like anybody else. He wore the suit. He talked like more of a troubadour than a 70s guy. He was totally different, and he was also extremely funny. And, of course, he had that voice, which was raspy when he talked, which made it at times seem very funny, you know, because he has a great sense of humor. Like Rob was saying, you should see his movies. And he's never starring in a movie, but he's always good in whatever movie he's in. Dracula, he's really good as Renfield. Very funny. And I could think of so many, but he's perfect for movies. He was perfect for Big Time, which was a good showcase of his talent. So anyways, we get to this first album. And this first album was produced, strangely enough, by Jerry Yester of the Lovin' Spoonful, who doesn't seem like the kind of guy you would pick. But he also produced Tim Buckley, so he's not exactly a pop guy. He was, he really kind of steered Tom Waits into... he wanted this album to be, and the record label Asylum, wanted this album to be kind of a folk album. And a folk storyteller album. And Tom Waits really wanted it more as a jazz lounge album. And I think the great thing about this album is the combination of the two. Because there's no real one side taking over another's, and it would. He did Nighthawks at the Diner, which was a live album. A lot of it was stories that he did a year or two later, which was very kind of jazz and what he wanted to do. But he's always lauded as being a songwriter. because his songs never got played on the radio. But everybody that did his songs got played on the radio.
I remember, I think it was Bob Seger being mad at Rod Stewart for getting recording of Downtown Train out first.
Yes. Yes. Really great. It's funny because I had only heard at that time the Rod Stewart version of Downtown Train, which I thought was just fantastic. And he did. Rod Stewart is known for two things as far as cover tunes are concerned: Bob Dylan songs and Tom Waits songs. And
I can see how his voice would work with Tom Waits.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, very much. Some people may think, Tom Waits and Rod Stewart, you got a guy from the street and a guy, you know, from England, and how does that work? And it actually works really brilliantly. But Tom Waits' version, which is not commercial like Rod Stewart, but that's Rod Stewart's job, is to make it commercial. But it is just as intriguing. Like, I find Tom Waits' versions to be just as good as any of the cover versions, but it's never going to be. With Tom Waits' voice and just his instrumentation, it's never going to be a hit. Never. A good example is Jersey Girl, which Tom had on his Heart Attack and Vine album. Again, a brilliantly written song, became a hit single for Bruce Springsteen. A perfect song for Springsteen because he's from Jersey and he would do his concerts with Jersey Girl, and there were just so many examples. I'm going to mention an example in just a second, actually. A couple of examples, even from this album. Like I said, it was recorded in early 1972, and there was a fight between Jerry Yester. Not a fight, but...
A disagreement
that Jerry Yester wanted more of a folk album. A folk blues album, and Tom Waits wanted to be Tom Waits, which was this troubadour piano man beatnik guy. And I don't know how it worked out, but to my listening ears, I have heard this album, by the way. Full disclosure. I've had this album for years and years. So when this came up as a debut album from 1973, I thought, well, I'd love to have this review this album and have this on the show. So this is not a new album to me. And at full disclosure, I love this album. I think it's brilliant. It changed it, and it's funny because I had heard before I bought this album about 10 years ago, I had heard so much Tom Waits music, but I'd never heard an album and a full album. I had always heard tapes, you know, of 90 minutes of various songs from various albums,
or covers,
all that stuff.
So
but I had
the
never,
song, but not the artist.
Yeah. Exactly. So when I finally said, "Oh, I'm going to buy a Tom Waits album," and I bought, decided, might as well buy the first one. I bought the first one, and it just, wow! I said, "This guy writes songs, man. Like, this guy writes songs the way I can't even believe. Like, this guy who comes off as this kind of hobo on the street is not a hobo on the street. This guy is like, he's got it and more. He's got talent like you wouldn't believe. Like the chord changes between how the verse starts and then the sieg into the chorus sometimes just is like, wow. It's that's why he's lauded as such a songwriter, is because of little things like that. But this album, and I like to go through it here, because it starts with Old 55, which I just think is a monster of a song. And it's one of those, see, he has these tales of life. And they're not big tales of life.
No,
they're not like a Bruce Springsteen Born to Run tale of life.
This is just one early
vignette,
morning driving home.
Yes, a vignette of a night.
A morning driving home
after whatever happened, whatever the first encounter. Few hours that night. And that's the vignette. It's not a big grandiose Bruce Springsteen thing where it's a huge story. It's a vignette of a story, and that's what he does.
It's kind of like this little point in time that he captures, and but you can see it so well.
Yes, you can. That's a great point. You can see Tom Waits.
I was on that freeway with the sun coming up and the trucks passing.
That is perfect. Rob, that's perfect. You can just see his lyrics. because of the way he sings. And this is why I always say, listen to the songwriter's songs.
Yes.
I'm not saying they're always better, but their point of view is their point of view, which is the songwriter's point of view. And they can get it across in a way that nobody else can really get it across.
That and the choice of words, and that he's he's almost minimalist. He's saying so much with so few words.
Yes. Man, yeah, you're just on. No, really. Like, you're saying stuff that I have in my back of my head, but I can't, like, really, I never thought of that, but he is. He's writing like a poet, but like he's editing as a poet. He's a street poet, you know?
It's so impactful. It's, there's a lot in there.
There's a lot in there.
But it doesn't sound like there's a lot in there.
That is what I think in that one sentence you said would encapsulate Tom Waits' work, at least in the 70s. Exactly word for word. That's Tom Waits right there. It sounds like he's writing a novel, and yet it's not anything like a novel. No, he knows exactly what to put in.
Yeah, he gets you on a subconscious level almost. Yeah.
If you
just give it a surface listen, like listen to a few lines, it's not going to mean too much. You get the whole thing in there, and then you get it.
You get it, yeah. And when you get it, you're hooked.
Yeah.
You're hooked.
The first few listens, I had trouble with this album. And the fourth listen, I had to actually sit down and listen to it song by song. I didn't listen to an album. I listened to it as a collection of songs. And that's where I really started to appreciate the songwriting.
I think I had also had trouble with it when I bought the album many, many years ago to listen to, because it was so different than what I listened to. Because Tom Waits is Tom Waits. There is no other music like that, really.
No. Yeah. It grew on me, but it grew much slower than albums that grow on me normally grow.
Yeah. No, I agree.
It was about listen five or six and I finally started.
Well, it's like listening to a new form of music because it is so different. Like Tom Waits is so different that it's like not only do you have to listen to a new album, but you kind of have to listen to a new way of presenting music and that he's doing. I'm not saying it's radical. I'm just saying that it's kind of a new way of the old singer-songwriter, and it's more of the guy at the piano at 3 a.m. And he's telling these world-weary stories. And
except the guy at the piano at 3 a.m., this guy, he's doing it perfectly. It's almost like in a dream.
And yet he's making no money, and he's going home to like this dingy apartment that he can barely pay for. Yeah. That's the image of Tom Waits, and that's what I love, because he even has that on the cover. He even looks like it's closing time, and he's on the cover all alone at this piano. And
are out, except for right over the piano.
Exactly. Now, an old 55, which is a brilliant song, it doesn't get much better lyrically, musically, anyway. It was covered like a lot of songs are. Not like most of his songs are, but this was covered by the Eagles. And I will tell you one thing. The Eagles did a really great version. And I remember even waiting to put it down when I listened to the Eagles album. I can't remember what album it's on. I think On the Border, maybe. I don't know. All the Eagles albums sound the same to me except for Hotel California. And when I say all the same, I mean shitty. Anyways. The Eagles fans are going to be so pissed at me. Old 55 was done really well by the Eagles, but it doesn't. There's no way you could touch this version. There's no way. Because you have to have that voice. Let's get to the voice before we talk about any more songs. One of the surprising things when I listened to this record for the first time was that Tom Waits' voice was there. I had always thought, listening to his music, that he had that voice where you could barely make out what he was saying. And yet, before that gravelly voice with the cigarettes deteriorated, he had a really good voice. Really good voice for the type of songs he was singing. And this, I'm going to say something which I don't know if I've heard anybody say before. I think it's a tragedy. And I know some people will say that his gravelly voice is what makes Tom Waits a legend. I don't know. When I hear him sing these songs, I think the tragedy is that voice went away and it was only here for just so small a time, like a year or two, and then it turned like extremely
I think his cigarette laden improved more than his voice deteriorated over the years.
Yes. I have like it's bittersweet because the album is so fantastic. And his music after that for the last 50 years has been so fantastic. But this voice is just it's so good. And it's not good like Pavarotti. You know what I mean? It's just a Dylan voice soulful, where it says soulful. Says so much.
You believe it.
You believe it.
You believe this is the guy. He's actually...
He's hitting these great notes, which you can't later on, even a couple of years later. And you realize the greatness of the songwriting by that. Instead of, I can't hit that note, and I'll just go, instead of goes, and then he'll sing high, and you'll go, oh, wow. Like, seriously. Like, he can hit the notes on these that he couldn't before, and then he would just kind of slough it off. And I'm not degrading his music later on. I'm just saying I wish he had that voice later on, because unlike maybe a lot of Tom Waits fans say, oh, he needs that voice because that's, you know what, I don't think so. I think it would have even added to his music.
A lot more with the voice he has from 73 than...
Right. I love his voice. This voice almost makes this album... a notch even better. Like if he had his old voice, I would still love this album, but not as much, I don't think. And so that's how much I think of his pre-gravelly voice. I mean, it's still rough, of course. You can hear the gravel start to come, but he can hit all the high notes, and it's just, oh, it blows me away because it's... Anyways, we...
Two halves of Tom Waits.
The two, yeah, it is. It's funny. There's the two halves, both in his music in the first half of his career and the music in his second half. And then there's the music when he had his voice and when he didn't. And there is, I think his career is defined by the two halves.
The two halves.
In many ways. There's the Tom Waits before he got married to Kathleen Brennan. And there's the Tom Waits when he did... around the time of One from the Heart in 1981 with Francis Coppola. And she changed his way of looking at music and made it more into experimental. There's that too. There is the two sides of Tom Waits throughout his career. Very interesting you brought that up. It's getting cold here. We got to wrap this up.
It is. And pretty soon that old furnace is going to kick in.
I just want to say the songs that I really love, I really like every song on here. But I hope that I don't fall in love with you. The second song after Old 45, I think is magnificent.
Slow one before Ice Cream and Lonely?
Oh, You see, now you're going and I'm going, oh, that song I love. Let's talk about that for 15 minutes.
That's the one on there that I kind of...
And that's so lonely. I love that. Lonely. And it's just, it sounds almost like pathos, but it's not. It's like, no, that's what lonely is.
I may have to listen to it more times.
That's great, Rob. That's just such a great song.
Yeah, that was a song that I... It didn't like that much. Other than that, I liked the rest of it.
Oh, really? See, I could see people not liking that because it's... I actually was thinking about this. That I was thinking, I bet you, like, a lot of people wouldn't like Lonely just because it's just, like, two things. So going, Lonely.
It's like, but not then enough there.
It's like there's not enough
but
there.
You're just not listening is what's happening.
I think so. I think so. I think in more listens, you kind of get the... although I do think it's not one of the strongest songs on the album as compared to the other ones, I still think there's more there than just a throwaway. I don't think there's any throwaways on here. And a lot of people might think Lonely is a throwaway.
I think it's an experiment that you get and I don't.
Okay. I'm not going to get into... Yeah, I like Ice Cream Man because it's upbeat and...
That's the one upbeat song on the album.
Yeah, and I like that. And there are songs... Martha, which I actually first heard Tim Buckley do a year later on his second last album. And I love Tim Buckley. And we will get to some Tim Buckley, I promise. Because he's one of my biggest influences ever. But I like Martha. It's, again, a story song about two people who were once girlfriend and boyfriend, and then they broke up and they led successful lives separately.
And it's been decades.
And then they come back together 30 years later, and they just kind of have a lunch together, and he kind of says, what could have been? What could have been? We never know. I think that's very touching. And I'm just going to comment song-wise, because there's 12 songs on here. I can't comment on everything. But I love that it ends on not only just an instrumental called Closing Time, the title cut, but I think the instrumental is first rate, and it feels like Closing Time. And if that seems like, whoa, big deal, I said, yeah, it actually is. Try write an instrumental that's melodic and plus conveys exactly what you're talking about. And it's a perfect ending to the album. I love this album so much. I love Tom Waits. I love 1970s Tom Waits. I just think the world of him. And I give it 5 out of 5. I just think it's a brilliant album. And I don't think Rob thinks the same way.
After the first three listens, my review was going to begin like this. I really wanted to like this album.
Oh, fuck, Rob.
That's after the first three listens.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Then, like I said, that fourth listen, I kind of thought, you know, something's wrong here. And so I just listened to the songs. And I really like the songs. It's strange. This one works better as a collection of songs for me than it does as an album. And even that's true after like six listens. However, after listening to it like that, it did start to grow on me. And then the fifth and sixth listen, I was starting to look forward to some of the songs because they were starting to stick in my head.
Again, I think this is...
But this is a slow one for... It grows on me, but it grows slow.
I think, and I was thinking, I think a lot of things when I listen to a record. And one of the things that I was thinking when I was listening to this as a review record, not in, you know, my past listening to it 50 times before, is that I was thinking, I think there's a discrepancy here between me and you, because this is more up my alley. Yeah. The singer-songwriter Bruce Springsteen, Tom Waits time thing is really, again, what artist did we just do that was, again, not up my alley? And
I could just flip this page over and have a look.
We just reviewed something that we just talked about, the same thing.
Okay, wasn't 10cc, wasn't Grand Funk. I'm going too far back.
I actually think it might have been 10cc, where we were talking about how 10cc is more up your alley. Because you liked the record a lot more than I did. I liked the record. I gave it 3.5. You gave it almost, you said 4.5. And I said, yeah, but you know what? It's not really it's really more your type of forte than it is my type of forte. Trust me, Rob, it is. I'm bringing back to it.
I think it was Elliot Murphy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you're right. I'm sorry.
You were digging on that, and I was like kind of confused.
You were 100% correct. And this is the same thing. The old singer-songwriter from the street.
I like the songs. I found it was a bit like that live band album that we reviewed.
Rock of Ages.
Yeah, like I really liked the music, but going through the whole thing, I found it was almost too much. It was too much of the band. And this initially was starting out as too much of the somber kind of music that he does.
Mm-hmm.
But
and I can see that.
After, like I say, 5 or 6 listens, it starts to grow on you. And the other thing I have to report, I was telling you earlier today, oh no, I was saying the other guys got laid off today. It was kind of a gloomy day.
Mm-hmm.
This is definitely a better album when you're in a not so good mood.
And I love that. I love when you're albums down in the like dumps, that. Again,
this album, that's actually it goes up a star.
Just like Elliot Murphy and that ilk, the guy with on the piano singing songs about how shitty his life is right in my wheelhouse. And that's why it's a little bit unfair, because I'm almost not objective about it because this is right in my wheelhouse. You know, that Springsteen Greetings and Wild and Innocent stuff, just like the Elliot Murphy, just right. And this is really right in my wheelhouse because I love, first of all, the image of the singer, songwriter, and the piano with the whiskey
lone
glass,
singer, songwriter,
the whiskey glass on the piano, along with the fifteen cigarette butts in the ashtray. That's why I love Tom Waits in the '70s so much, and it's almost unfair because it's too much in my wheelhouse. So it's almost like I can't be objective because it's just really my type of music. You know what I mean?
I need about 5 or 6 more listens, and I'd start to.
But that doesn't take away from I think the songwriting is just not a guy at the piano. The songwriter is brilliant for me.
That's my point. I enjoyed listening to the songs individually a lot more than listening to the album as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
The album as a whole, I almost thought initially it was too much Tom, too much of the same similar feel.
Right.
Because it's somber pretty much. Even the songs that are somewhat upbeat are played in a somber style.
Yes, they are. You know, you're right. You're right. They're, even the upbeat, they're almost played like I'm still alone here playing the piano.
But it got me faster today when I was kind of a little bummed out and frazzled. And
You know what? These albums are meant to be played at midnight, 1 o'clock.
Yeah, whatever. Like you were saying, the 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. No doubt. And you know what? We've talked about two albums that were really in my wheelhouse and not much yours. I really think the 10cc one was an opposite example of an album that I knew you would really like because of
the weirdness, changes
and yet I liked it because the same reason you like Tom Waits is that the musicianship, these are good songs, but you know, the humor and stuff, it's not really my cup of tea. So we've had in the last, funny enough, in the last 3 or 4 shows, albums that were, and this sometimes happens, where
opposite
you have opposite
especially
views, but successfully.
The divisive Todd Rundgren.
and even We're an American Band is definitely not in my wheelhouse, but it is more in yours. And it's strange that we've had 4 or 5 albums like that in a row, where it's been like, well, this is what Rob likes. But this is not particularly what I like. But you can still appreciate the album for what it is, but I could never like it as much as you. Like, I could never like 10cc as much as you could, because that's more your taste. There's no way. I knew this before that. There's no way you could love Tom Waits like I could love Tom Waits, because that's more like my style, you know?
Yeah, like I say, it started off lukewarm and stayed lukewarm to listen to the songs, and then I started warming up to it.
I have more of a, and I know Rob very well. We've known each other forever. I know Rob, and you've already said it, basically. I know Rob likes the Tom Waits of Big Time, the movie, to see him visually and to hear the music. And I don't see you like going nutso over a record like of Tom Waits. You know what I mean? Like 5-star nutso.
Not until after I've had a bunch of listens.
Yeah. Yeah. That's just my impression. Whereas I could listen to it the second time and go, fuck, man. That's what music ought to be. Yes. You know how I'm like, yeah.
Why are you clowns doing music different from the... Listen. Running. Everyone gather around and listen.
Running onto the streets. Listen. So I gave it 5 out of 5. That's my top. Of course, that's our top. That's classic masterpiece. 4 debut album, I should say. Yours?
It's a 4-star album for me. I found the songwriting was 4.5. The actual album listening experience for me was about 3.5, so I averaged it out.
Yeah. So 4 overall. Yeah,
four
because you
overall,
said 4.5
yes.
And 3.5 for that, so 4. Yeah.
The songwriting, it grabs you. It doesn't grab you quickly, it grabs you slowly.
Hey, if you would have told me beforehand you were going to give it 4 stars, I would consider that a complete success for Tom Waits. And that ends like our look, like I said many times in this show, too many times, on 1973. We're getting ready for 1974 already for a whole year, 3 months.
Ooh.
well, we don't do it 3 months straight, but how we do it every year. And 1974, like every year in the 1970s, is
chalked full.
It is. I was looking at the albums to pick, because at the our tradition is at the our first shows of the new year are always 50 years back. So I'm looking at some of the albums to pick, and there is only like 50 that made my short list. There were so many albums that there was 50, literally 50 albums that I said, we should do that one. We should do that one. I said, oh my God.
You just had to put the list up on a dartboard.
Exactly. You just got to go with, sometimes you just got to go with your gut. Like I went with my gut with Elliot Murphy. Like I just said that for some reason, I think we have to do this album.
Well, that was interesting to listen to because he's big in other parts of the world and didn't catch on here, which is...
Yeah,
I don't know. Wild,
which is wild. I mean, it's good to expose something like that instead of artists that people know or even that we know, you know. And that's another reason for this show is to expose what we hope is a lost classic. We don't want to expose an album that nobody's heard of because it shouldn't be heard of. There's a reason why nobody knows of this album.
All right, we're going to listen to a lost non-classic. It's lost for a reason. Thrown over a ship.
Next week, we will be doing a tribute to Gary Wright. The week after that, we will be doing a tribute to Jimmy Buffett. And then the week after that, we will be having our Christmas show.
And that one's a surprise.
So, yeah, actually, it's funny. This is the first time I'm giving no surprises because I'm telling you what our shows are going to be for the next 3 weeks. But who knows what happens on our Christmas shows are crazy.
Yeah, and lots of guys have done Christmas albums. So who could it be?
Yeah, actually, I actually counted, and I think with the ones we've done, the 70s was not a big Christmas album. We've talked about this on every Christmas show, but the 70s was not a hip time to be doing Christmas albums. And to be honest, I think after this year, there's only like four more albums that were actually done, like other than doing Andy Williams, which we're not going to do or anything like that. There really is only like four albums. So I don't know, in another 5 years, our Christmas show will just be me and you yapping. Talking about, hey, how you like that eggnog?
Eggnog is good. You like the wrapping on those presents? Well, not for you, but you like the wrapping?
Well, we could do a what if. What if Led Zeppelin made an album in like 76 that was a Christmas album? Wouldn't that be cool?
What do you think the longest Christmas Carol they do would be? And you know, Jimmy Page was going to solo for a while.
A 12-minute silent night.
was not so silent.
I didn't know Bonzo was going to do a drum solo in Silent Night. That was wild.
Yeah, we told him a little drummer boy. Take that one.
So that's our show for today. Like I said, we usually take a week off. We're not. We're going straight through until the Christmas break. And yeah, we're doing three shows in a week. You guys don't care about that.
This is crazy.
But that's crazy.
Fortunately, we have a lot of weeks to prepare for it. So
yeah. Well, you guys don't know about this because we have a crazy schedule.
You can't know.
You can't. Well, you're not supposed to know. We're letting you on a government secret here, because you'll never know that we had to do three shows in a week because we have to get back on schedule. Yeah. It seems like we always have to get back on schedule.
The latest thing was we were waiting for heat. We had three shows.
We had to wait for heat.
No heat for three shows.
And, oh, yeah, and last week you, or the week before, you were hurting from work and you had some stuff at work. We had to cancel.
Oh, last week at work, yeah, I was working late 2 days in a row.
Yeah. Oh. So we couldn't do last week. And then this week we thought there was going to be heat and we had to cancel one of our tapings because there was no heat.
And move the other one a day past the time.
So we were going to do two episodes this week. No. So we got to do three in 7 days. But I shouldn't say this because people will say, wait a minute, how can you listen to three albums in a week? No, we have listened to the records.
You plan on doing it in a week, and it gets canceled for 2 weeks. You've already done it.
Yes, we've already listened to the albums. It's just we haven't taped the show. That's
just,
all.
2 weeks later, when you do the show, you got to have a refresher listen.
Yeah, you just can't go in and say, okay, what album are we doing? What is this?
And the third song in the album. The 9-minute song.
From what I remember, it was pretty good.
Oh, geez, no, I'm thinking of a different album.
Were we talking about Uriah Heep? Oh, Tom Waits. Oh, wow.
He did an album with Uriah Heep called Tom Heap.
Tom Heap. That'd be a good album. Man, the ideas we could have had if we were out in the 70s.
We could have been producers.
So I guess that's it. We got nothing. Actually, we've been kind of bullshitting for 5 minutes for no reason. So
no, not for no reason. Because we were about to finish early.
Yes, we're finishing early. We could have finished at exactly an hour, but we had to bullshit. we will see you next week with a tribute to Gary Wright. So until then, everybody take care and stay safe. I just write her off. You're a crazy man, I tell you. A fucking crazy man.
It's not going on until it reaches 14 degrees.